Tonight we're a little bit more relaxed because
how was the band?
It was really scheduled to be a night about Hanukkah, and I made it into a night about Nachas. We're behind, so we will catch up tonight. But I wanted to point out that there's a problem with the Vim Rishonim in general, which I don't have a resolution for, but it should be raised nonetheless, which is, on what level of Nevuah, I don't think we discussed this yet, on what level of Nevuah were Nevi'im Rishonim written? In other words, we believe that Nevi'im Rishonim were written by prophets. So Gemara and Ba'abas, which tells us which prophet wrote which one of the Nevi'im Rishonim, whether it was Yoshua, Pinchas, Elazar, Shmuel, Nathan HaNavi, God HaChoze, whoever was written by prophets. Was this prophecy? When they tell us that there was this whole big story with Gidon and Avimelech and this whole big mice of Midian, was this actually a prophecy which Shmuel was prophesying? Or was this note something which he wrote himself, which the divine spirit rested upon him? And this is not a resolved issue. You should know this is a very difficult thing because the Gemara never addresses this point. The Gemara just tells us who the authors are, and it doesn't tell us at what level of Nevuah they wrote it. Not even the Rambam tells us this. The Rambam tells us that Kesuvim, things which are found in the Kesuvim part of Nach, are certainly at a lower level of Ruach HaKodesh than things found in the Novi part of Nach. But he's talking about the difference between, say, Yishayo and Yirmiyo versus a Kesuvim, where we have actual explicit prophecies. But here, none of this Sefer is written in the Lashon of Ko Amar Hashem. I mean, I shouldn't say none of it. There are bits and pieces here and there. But preponderantly, this is a historical work. So there are Rishonim who said, there are sources, I think even Rishonim, who say that the Navi was told by God what to write. And that seems to be the standard accepted answer, that the Navi was told by God what to write.
Before or after?
That's the standard answer. Although I'm coming to your point. Wait a second. So the standard understanding is that he was told beforehand what to write, and that he took this nevuah, which was a vision or a dream, and then the next morning he wrote that. However, I was speaking today to Rabbi Hirsch Eisenberg at the yeshiva, who's a very big expert on Tanakh, and he said that in his opinion, there were written works which predated the compilation, say, of Sefer Shoftim by Shmuel. And Shmuel was directed by God to take these written accounts and compile them into Sefer Shoftim, and probably bridge the gaps and do some editing and such like. So there actually was something written down beforehand, before Shmuel's time, because Shmuel is not contemporaneous with the events in Sefer Shoftim, and he was told to compile those writings into Sefer Shoftim. So the writing, this is coming to what you were saying before, if I understand it correctly. So the writing is not the Ruach HaKodesh, according to this, the interpretation is not the Nevuah. The editing was done with the Nevuah. Those are the two schools of approach which there are. Now, there are other schools of approach in that horn. There's a famous Reb Chaim Brisker, which is a little bit weird, but this is what Reb Chaim says. Reb Chaim says, unlike the Rambam, there's no difference between Navi, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. No difference whatsoever. The Rambam said there's a difference. Nevi'im, Rishon, Nevi'im, Navi was said on a higher level, Ruach HaKodesh, it was a vision, a dream, whereas Ksuvim primarily are not visions or dreams, or rather are just divinely inspired writings. That's the Rambam's dichotomy. Reb Chaim says they're both Nevuah. Reb Chaim, you know, it's like a Brisker. If it's a Nevuah, it's a Nevuah. Right? The Rambam distinguishes 15 gradations in levels of Nevuah and Mer Nevuchim. I think it's 15. Reb Chaim, obviously, is a Brisker. He says, Chaloy Shem Nevuah is a Chaloy Shem Nevuah. If it's called a Nevuah, that means it's a Nevuah. So there's no difference between Ruach HaKodesh of Nevi'im and Ruach HaKodesh of Ksuvim. So what's the difference? He says that the Nevuahs in Nevi'im were meant to be said before they were written, whereas the Nevuahs in Ksuvim were meant from the get-go to be written down. That's the distinction he makes. Which is an interesting distinction, but I don't think it washes in Nevi'im Rishonim. Because Nevi'im return, what, Shmuel actually had to stand in a marketplace and start reading the story about Gideon and Midian? Doesn't seem to be correct. It could be Nevi'im Achronim that's true about Yeshayo, Yirmiyo, but that certainly would not explain Nevi'im Rishonim. Because Nevi'im Rishonim, it's clear that there was no declamation, no oratory of all the points which are made here. So I think that one of the two prior interpretations is the correct one. I don't know which one. Either that Nevuah was given to Shmuel, write down this account, write down that account, and in this manner, or like Rabbi Eisenberg put it, which is probably more likely, that there were pre-existing written accounts, and Shmuel was told to cobble it together in this way, shape, or form. Okay? But this is something you should know, which in general is an ongoing issue. I mean, it's not resolved anywhere explicitly and conclusively in Chazal, and therefore anything we say is a theory and not an actual fact of the Mesorah. So therefore it is an open question. You're entitled to bring up your own opinions. Yeah?
According to the second story,
yeah.
Where did these bits and pieces come from that Shmuel then cobbled together?
We don't know. Certainly contemporaneous people, perhaps people like Gideon himself, wrote down accounts of what was going on at the time.
Seems to me very dangerous, kind of, without thinking it all the way through. But it seems
we live in this sheer, in the danger zone. Somebody was telling me today that he holds you can only teach Navi either to very small children or to very great scholars. Very small children because they'll accept everything. Very great scholars because they have the proper awe. He said to Balabatim, he doesn't know if one should teach Nach. Because who knows what they'll come out with. But we are willing to accept upon ourselves, Amanat Kain Banu, that we're going to come and take the danger upon ourselves and we are studying Nach together. Right?
Why do we given the two choices.
Yeah.
Why do we keep it together with so close with Torah? Why do we keep it in such Madrega's next term, called Tanakh?
Yeah, because it's written by Nevi'im. Things which are written by Nevi'im on a high level. You're right there. It's good.
Let's back up a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, like Sefer Shoftim. Why should Sefer Shoftim, which we see as a compilation,
yeah,
not really, but all right, Nevi'im Achronim say were written directly by the Nevi'im.
Right. Yeah. It's prophesied. Right.
Apparently, this was not written. It was just compiled by Shmuel, and it just okay.
Yeah.
By Shmuel, but it should not have been in the same Madriga as the Achronim. Assuming that which was directly written by.
I don't know if it is. The Nevi'im Rishonim might not be on the same level as Nevi'im Achronim. You're right. We don't know from anywhere. We're not told anywhere explicitly that it is on the same Madriga. We know it's higher than Ksuvim.
But we say it's the Esrim Rebbe.
Right. It's but
Swarm. I mean, which means Yeshua Shoftim is also.
Well, certainly Ksuvim, which is an even lower level of Chuliam, was also part of Tanakh, right? I mean, shows Ksuvim is divinely inspired writings.
It was divinely inspired writings, but according to what we're saying now.
It was divinely inspired editing.
Apparently, it was divinely inspired editing, which is not divinely inspired writing.
Granted, but that obviously that's good enough because if God says it's like we say Kazera Eva Kadesh. If you say this is something which we sanctify, and we put God said codify it as part of the canon. By the way, the canon itself was not canonized until when? Anshekneses Hagdola. Right, so obviously during Bais Rishon, this was, you know, you could still present your books to the Sanhedrin and have them as candidates for canonization, right? The canon was still open, so all Bais Rishon's period, in fact, is part of the Nach period. So in that time, Torah, obviously people were writing things down, some of which came down to us as Tanakh, and some of which obviously the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah discarded. So the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, at the point where they canonized Tanakh, they in fact decided what enters into Nevi'im, what enters into Ksuvim, based on their awareness of who wrote which part with which level of quote unquote Ruach HaKodesh. Yeah.
I'm tempted to say that you're leading us to draw the comparison with Hanukkah, that there's a principle of Bochet, Volech, and Mosif.
You're putting me too much into it. You're reading too much into my intention. Yeah.
Permit me.
Yeah, no, I certainly permit you. No, I did not draw a comparison with Bochet.
If you're juxtaposing between Nevi'im and Ketuvim,
yeah,
and according to one view, Nevi'im is at a higher Madriga than Ketuvim.
Right. the beam is high.
Then you turn it on, turn it up. And now you're saying
that Nevi'im Achronim, Naktuvim, that Nevi'im Achronim may be a higher level Nevi'im Rishonim.
Yeah, because it was written.
It was Mamish
Nevuah. It was
Nevuah. Mamish.
Total.
Yeah.
Whereas
Nevi'im Rishonim is compiled by
Nevi'im. Nevi'im were bits and pieces, and the Nevuah was only in the sense that, that the editing was done
right
under. So it's.
Right. It could be, that's right. One, right. But I looked, Rabbi Yitzhak Sender from the yeshiva has a sefer called O Rivka, which he has a whole section on the qualifications of to be Nevi'im and Ksuvim. And there are a lot of things brought down there, but most of them do address the issue of Nevi'im Achronim versus Ksuvim. Very few people ever sat down to address the issue of Nevi'im Rishonim versus Ksuvim. And that's the problem. We're really in an amorphous area. Okay? Now that we've gotten through that interesting introduction, let's do some psukim themselves. Tonight we're going to start from... Oh, no. I stapled this wrong. I'm sorry. Yeah. My apologies. I stapled this out of order. Page, the 1, 2, 3, 4th page in the handout is where we're going to start tonight. Okay, then we're going to go back to the 3rd page. So, we're going to start from Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayomer Zevel Tzamona, we saw last week, we saw that Gideon had caught the kings of Midian, Zevel and Tzamona, and he told Yesser, his son, to kill them. But Yesser didn't want to do it. Yesser was afraid because he was still a child. So we're picking up now with this scene. Vayomer Zevel Tzamona, Zevel Tzamona said to Gideon, you know what? Kuma Tov Gabanu. You get up and you smite us. Ki chayish kuraso, based on the maturity of an individual, so too is his power. You're more mature, more powerful. So we would prefer if you kill us. In other words, to be quicker, more painless, and also more mechubad if Gideon himself kills them than his children. Vayakum Gideon, so Gideon arose. Vayarog Zevach and Tzamona. He killed Zevach and Tzamona. Vaykachas asaronim, and he took the ornaments which are in the forms of moons, Asher b'tzavreg malem, which were on the necks of their camels. Now, we're going to see subsequently that Gideon was not a person who pursued great wealth. However, it seems that he was into covet. He was into honor. And we're going to see that explicitly in the next few psukim.
We saw it before.
We saw it before.
Okay, and Elohim v'Gideon.
But we're going to see, what's interesting here is the kind of ornaments he took. He took saronim. Saronim are ornaments in the shape of a moon. Well, that's very much in line with Gideon, because all of Gideon's feats, which we've described until now, are taking place in the nighttime. So Gideon was kind of like this moon man, right? So therefore, it's clear that he had this fascination with the moon and everything the nighttime represented, and that's obviously why he went for this first. But he didn't stop there. Vayomer Ish Yisrael Gideon, the people of Am Yisrael said to Gideon, Mishal Bar, you rule over us. Gamata, both you. Gam Bincha, your son. Gam Ben Bincha, and your grandchildren. Kiyo Shaltana Miyad Midyan, because you saved us out of Midyan. Now, Gideon refuses. Vayomer Gideon, Gideon says, Lo Emshol Ani Bochem, I'm not going to rule over you. Lo Emshol Bani Bochem, and my son will not rule over you. Hashem Yimshol Bochem, God will rule over you. Now, it's interesting. Although Gideon refuses, however, there are a couple of interesting things. First of all, when Gideon responds, he says, I ain't going to rule over you, and neither is my son going to rule over you. But there's an opening here. What did they propose to him? His grandson. Well, Gideon's not saying, but my grandson and my grandson either. It's already a little bit of a interesting point. Not only that, this is the first time we ever had a dialogue like this in Sefer Shoftim. We've had many Shoftim before and who performed great acts of courage. Ehud, Osniel, Dvorah. Nobody ever said to any of them, at least not that it's recorded, please be a king over us and take over the hereditary kingship. Why Dafka with Gideon does a reporter for the first time? It must be that there was something to negotiate here. That Gideon Take was interested in negotiations.
I have a question.
What?
Ish Yisrael.
Uh-huh. Excuse me? Mm-hmm.
I mean, Shmuel makes such a big deal that God is angry at you because you asked for Shaul to be Melech.
Yes.
And there's precedent. I don't see God getting angry yet.
They didn't actually follow through on it.
No, just even the request. Man, no.
Yeah, but there I was angry at the request. It took Shaul to make fulfill the request.
Yeah.
At Hashem's will.
But you have to bear somebody else in mind, which is something which we haven't discussed yet, which we probably should have, but I'm waiting for Pilegish Begiva. The generation of Shoftim was on a lower madrega than the generation of the Melachim. The generations, I should say. The generation of the Shoftim were one of the nadirs in Jewish history. They really hit rock bottom. And therefore, the tvia, the complaints against them... What?
I don't know.
The tvia on them, the complaint against them, is perhaps not as strong as generation of Shmuel. By Shmuel's times already, when they were under Shmuel's leadership, things were on the upswing. They had a good leader. They were functioning pretty well. Not a time to ask for a king. Here, anyway, they were down. They were sinners at this point. So on this sin, God is going to get them? When they're on a high madrega, then request a king. So that's not right. When you're on a low madrega, you're not even Avodah Zarah anyway, right? Most of our Avodah Zarah is Avodah Zarah at this point. We don't see Gidon infecting any mass tshuva. Bear in mind, all the stories that you have of Gidon, which are taking place in a matter of days. There's no mass tshuva movement. So here you have a bunch of sinners coming to Gidon and saying, you be king over us, right? We're going to say, and also you ask for a king. It's kind of pales by comparison to the major sins which they had at this point. That's where I think the understanding is. It's interesting, though, just before you, the Alpach Shimoni says that Gidon was rewarded for refusing the kingship. He refused the kingship in three ways. He said, not me, not my son, God will rule over you. So therefore, his son, we're going to see later in the parak, Avimelech was a king for 3 years. Sounds like it's a reward. But the truth is, if when we see the mice of Avimelech, we'll see, with such reward, people don't need punishments. And I would say that, although the Yalkut seems to put a positive spin on it, Lamaise, it's a negative thing. That Avimelech's 3 years of kingship were based on a false rejection, or perhaps not a complete rejection, of the request by Gidon over here. Yeah?
The first part of my question is...
Which
first? Strange lotion of Ishisrael.
It's more. Can I follow up?
Oh, I don't know Ishisrael. It's a good point, yes.
Can I follow up just another?
Yeah.
First of all, from the statement that they do, Vayomru Ishisrael, and then Vayomer Gidon, Vayomer Aleihem.
Yeah.
Now, is it as they spoke as one, or they spoke as. But more than that, everything that we've learned, it seems that we've learned in the first Parakim, suggested in giving us a thumbnail description of the situation at the time, that there was pilug and there was divisiveness. Last time we saw Menashe and Ephraim, before that we asked questions about Dvorah, why did she only turn to these Shvatim and not the others, and why didn't the others? There was no unity. What leads us to think at this sudden victory over Midian that suddenly they were in a position to speak as though Ki Ish Echad?
It's a good question. And certainly not all the Jews were there at that time. I don't know. I'm not sure.
In whose name did they speak? Who was the mandate?
Yeah, it's a good question.
One shaded?
I don't know who the Ishisrael are. I concede to you, I don't know exactly what the Ishisrael refers to. It could be that there's some metaphoric meaning which I can't think of offhand, but you're right, it's a good question. I don't have an answer for it. So let's go on, nonetheless. Vayomer Aleihem Gidon. Gidon said, says, I have one question for you. One request, rather. Shalom ikem shelo. Usnuli ish nezem shlolo. Each one of you give me a nezem from his booty. Now, nezem is a nose ring. But also, the word nezem itself is a degrading word because it comes from the word zima. Zima is a lashon of znus, licentiousness. So the nose ring is something which obviously connoted... I don't know why, connoted connection to Zima, to lust. So, key, why do they have Nizami? Why do the Midianim have these Nizami to begin with? The Pasuk tells us, let's go back to the page before, Ki Shmoelim Haim, because they're Arabs. It's interesting, the Midianim are considered to be Arabs. That's why they have nose rings. Because the Arabs, B'nai Shmoel, are the ones who are always into lust. So therefore, if we have to explain the lustful trait of the Midyanim, because we know Midyanim, we explained a couple of times ago, really connote the Midara of anger. And it's Yishmaelim, the Arabs always connote the Midara of lust. So we say, don't worry, Midyanim, they're also Yishmaelim. And by the way, we had this last week by Yosef, right? When Yosef was sold, we bow back and forth between Midyanim and Yishmaelim. So it could be that there's a parallel here. The Midyanim and Yishmaelim were nations which mingled with each other and therefore became kind of like one nation. They were Midyanim and Yishmaelim. So Gideon asked, only the Malim points out, for one nezim per person. He says, please do me a favor, just give me one nezim for each of you. Vayomru, again, he wasn't into wealth. Vayomru, so therefore he said, certainly nasonti ten nitain, certainly we'll give you. Vayipresua sasimla, they spread out a blanket. Vayishlihu shama ish nezim shlomo. And they put in that blanket, each person who went out to war, gave him one nezim from the booty. The weight of all the nezamim which he requested was 1,700 pieces of gold. Levad min ha'saharonim, besides all the moon ornaments, vantifos and all the hanging ornaments, uvigdei argamon, and the clothes made out of purple linen, shamalchei midjan, which were on the kings of midjan, uvad min ha'nokos, and besides the other necklaces, asher b'tzavorei gemaleim, which were on their camels' necks. So Gideon got all this stuff. What did he do with it? Again, he was not into wealth. Vayas also Gideon le'efo. Gideon made from it a belt. Vayatsego sobi ro b'ofra. And he put this belt on display in a city in Ofra. Vayiznu koiso achrov. So all the Jews, what did they do when they saw this belt? You see, the Jews see a belt, what do? Worship it. Vayiznu koiso achrov. They lusted after the belt, shrum. Vayu l'gidon l'beisol mokesh. And this belt became for Gideon and his house a stumbling block. It became a tremendous limud chov, a tremendous prosecuting attorney against Gideon and Shamayim for having created this avodah zarah. Now let's talk about the ephod a little bit. Let's talk about wait.
That's psychedelic.
1 second. First of all, the ephod seemed to commemorate the nace and its might. That's the simple shot, right? You made this belt to show, you know, the mighty belt of a warrior. This is to show, you know, the wrestlers have these big belts, I think. So this is the same idea that Gideon has this big belt, the championship belt of being the mighty warrior. That's the push-up shot. The read, however, the Peirush Rabbi Yeshaya says that belt was magical. And Chazal and Rus Rabbah say Gideon was swayed here by idolatry. I don't know if he became an idolater mamish, but his Avodah Zarah roots came into play here. Now that's a couple of interpretations. There's another interpretation, the Yalkut Shimoni, which is fascinating. The Yalkut Shimoni says that on the Cheshev HaEfod, in the Big Day Kohen Gadol, I wrote here the Cheshev, but that's a mistake. In the Kohen Gadol had an Ephod, which went around a belt from which they hang an apron. I forgot what it was called, the belt, the apron. That was also called the ephod, right? The meal.
The ephod
was the whole apron. And besides that, it had the cheshev ha-ephod, which were shoulder straps, kind of like suspenders, which came down off the top. And each side was a stone. Precious stone. And each one of which was engraved six of the shvatim. 6 and 6, 12. So we paskin that for Yosef, it said Yosef. But the Yalkut Shimoni says that on the Cheshev and the Avnei Achol Ephod, it didn't say Yosef, it said Ephraim. And therefore, Gideon was jealous, right? Because which Shevet was Gideon from? Menasheh. So Gideon made this Ephod as kind of like a revenge on Ephraim's Ephod. So Ephraim was on the Ephod of the Kohen Gadol, so this one was made instead of them. And then the Yalkut Shimoni says a fascinating thing. I wrote it down here. Well, if he shaloha yashivto ba'ephod, since the Shevet was not on the actual Ephod, loya lo mazal ba'oso Ephod, he didn't have any luck with this Ephod which is made, with also tikkun in trying to make this rectification. That's a very important thing. This is a very anti-conservative Judaism, Yalkut Shimoni. How so? Because what the Alter Rebbe tells us that a tikkun or a takana must have a source. Otherwise, it has no validity. You can't make up a new takana, like let's say, you know, the conservatives just changed the Nusach HaTfil. I think I told you some of you this. Nusach HaTfil, they just issued a new Siddur, in which they say in the first Baruch Shemon Esrei, Elokei Avoseinu, Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, and Elokei Moseinu, Elokei Sarah, Elokei Rivka, Elokei Rachel, and Elokei Leah. That's a very nice, beautiful, sentimental thing. But a tikkun or a takana which has no basis in Chazal is meaningless. That's, you know, that's for somebody mentioned in passing the other day, that's why in Israel, the conservative reform never really gained, have not yet, but fortunately they're getting strong, gained a foothold, because Israelis are smart enough to understand that made up things don't have any validity. Americans go for all these kinds of touchy-feely type ritual things, but Israelis know if it's not real, it's baloney as much as you try. I don't know, that's the way it used to be at least. What?
May I be permitted to insult you? It says the Israelis prefer to shorten the davening.
To shorten the davening, right. So.
No, Eddie, don't
ask Schmitz. Right, something must be anchored in Kedusha in order to have a positive effect. And therefore, if Ephraim was destined to represent Shevet Yosef in the stones, then Menashe's overstepping the bounds is not going to do them any good. It doesn't work. If Hashem didn't mean it to be that way, you can jump up and down from today to tomorrow. It's not going to do you any good. Therefore, takanos must be made, when they are made, by people who have insight into the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the ways of the world, such as Chazal. Otherwise, they have no validity whatsoever.
Now, who accepted
the
Zabozer?
Amisro. How Amisro? It's interesting, I just wanted to point.
Nobody got up and said, hey guys, this is wrong?
Gidon didn't.
No, Gidon, but Gidon.
He was the leader.
He was the leader. He
yeah.
Then went and built his belt, made his belt.
Yeah.
People came up and said, hey, this is a Zabozer. Boom.
Right. That was very normal back then. Avodah Zarah was a commonplace thing.
Fine, but you mean to tell me there
think
were...
Think of parallels in today's Judaism.
I'm trying.
Today's Jewish world.
Television.
Think of a parallel. The interesting thing is that the Lashon here, Vayiznu, I think I pointed this out before. It's nus, and right, low up, because the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Samakim. Perhaps this answers your question as well. Lo up to Yisrael avodazara el kadei lahatir len arayis. When Jews worship avodazara, that's only an excuse. What they really want to get at is the arayis. So by yisnu,
the ego was also made from the
ego was also made from the zomer. It was also used for avodazara. It's a very good parallel. That's right. I didn't make the connection, but you're right. It's a very good parallel. What did you want to ask before?
No, I was.
Okay, so that's I believe is what's going on here, and this, and I think the pasuk we're going to see how the pasuk may the navi derides Gidon for this whole incident. Let's go a little bit further. Vayikana midjan livnei bnei Yisrael, the midjanim were subjugated before the Jews. Velo yasvu laseis rosham, they no longer uplifted their heads, and I believe that although I didn't see anybody address this explicitly, there's a double lashon here. Yeah, it's on. Tape's on. The Loyas Hulasis Rosham means that spiritually the Midyanim were defeated for all time now. Vayikana means they're physically subjugated. And Loyas Hulasis Rosham means that spiritually the Midyanim are no longer going to be a factor in world history. La Rosham means here the intellect, the quality of the nation as a spiritual being, they're finished. They were decimated.
Is it
yes.
From later on?
No, Majorim, that's it. We're finished with them. As far as I recall. Majorim we're finished with forever. Vayelech Yerubal ben Vatishkot Aratzar Boim Shana Bimei Gidon. The land was quiet for 40 years and days of Gidon. So the Rabbah says here that here the 40 years doesn't include the Shibud. That's what it's saying. It was 40 years of quiet Bimei Gidon. Normally you say that when a Shofet, like by Osnia, when it says a Shofet for 40 years, so the 40 years total includes the years of Puranut, the years in which they suffered. Here we mean to say that there are 40 years of actual quiet. Vayelech Yerubal ben Yosh, Vayesher Beveso. So Yerubal ben Yosh went and sat at home. Now, what's the pasuk doing here? I think this pasuk is sarcastic. Yerubal ben Yosh, we mean This is we're calling you Baal, which is the name of glory which he had, the one who fights the Baal, the one who fights Avodah Zarah. So we're saying, look what kind of Yerubal this fellow turned out to be.
Wait. So during his 40 years, everything was quiet?
Everything was quiet.
No Avodah Zarah?
No. No physical wars.
Just physical wars.
Okay. So there's a saying in the Gemara, Zro Kutra Bavira, Aikara Kaima. If you throw a stick up in the air, it'll fall back in the place where it came from. And there must be a parallel saying in English. So here too, Yerubal, after everything was said and done, this big Yerubal, right? He fought the Baal, he fought Midian. In the end, he's Ben Yoash. He's the son of his father. Who is his father, Yoash? An idolater, a Kohen for Avodah Zarah. Vayesha Bebeso, he went back to his home. He didn't, all his big Yerubal business came to naught. What's your saying?
Faultless fire from the mind.
Right. Very ancient Yiddish saying. So that's
the translation.
Yeah. So that's what happens to Gidon. Not only that, first of all, he sits at home. Now, we're not accusing Gidon Chas V'Shalom for the Zarah, but he didn't go and rebuke anybody. He sat at home. He was no big Yerubal anymore. He wasn't out fighting. He let the Jews worship the eightfold. He sat at home. Not only that, he made, as we said, he made the eightfold out of the Nezamin. And by using the Yisrael, well, Gidon was busy himself. Well, Gidon had 70 children. Kinoshim Rabus Hayulo. What was concerned him? He had many wives. Okay. Let's say, but this is the point. Noshim Rabo Sayulo, to have many wives. Not only that wasn't enough. Besides his wives, Upilaksho Ashebishchem, he had a concubine in Shem. And Pilaksho Ashebishchem, by the way, why in Shem? In Shem did he have a Pilegish?
Goes back to Dina.
Shem was that's true, it's Mekor Mekor Mu'ad and Perlut, that's going to come in next back. But my take on this is that Shem was in Ephraim, and we saw always that Ephraim was the seat of the Shoftim. That's where Yehoshua came from, that's where Dvorah held court, even though she was from Shevet Naphtali. And that he too, Gideon, wanted to take over. As we said, he didn't reject the kingship explicitly. Or he did, but he didn't reject it completely. He also wanted to assert his leadership. And the place to do it in that time was in Shechem. So he made sure to have a concubine in Shechem. He wanted to assert himself as being one of the leaders. And look what it says in the end of the Pasuk. Yoda Gelo Gami, she also gave birth to him, Ben, and he called his name, the kid's name, Avimelech. What does Avimelech mean? My father is a king. This is Gidon. He's saying, to calling his son, my father is a king. So what does he mean by that? Yeah. It obviously was emphasizing the premeditated nature. Right, we never even saw that Lashon before. Vayosem Mishmo is clearly indicating that there was intentional stress on the name. That he publicized and gave fanfare to this name, I believe. And that's what Avimelech means. In other words, he was enticed. He always skirted the kingship. Perhaps he couldn't come and claim it explicitly, but he certainly was attracted by the idea. Vayomas Gidon ben Yoash b'seva toiva. Gidon ben Yoash died in good old age, so the Yalkut says he didn't deserve it. He said that his leadership was obviously deficient, and he really didn't deserve the seva toiva, but he got it anyway. Vaykaver bekever Yoash Aviv, and he was buried in the grave of Yoash's father, Ba'afra Avi Ezri, and Afra in the portion of Avi Ezri. And again, this emphasis here of Gidon ben Yoash and his kavura in Yoash seems to indicate that the Nach regards him here as somewhat of a failure. Yeah.
Could it be he was given the Seva Tova to reward him in this world so he doesn't get it?
No, I don't. He's not described as one of the people Einu Chayech Lom Ha, but he wasn't an evil person in that sense.
The majority of his schar would be here.
I don't know if that's true. I think probably he got schar because he saved Am Yisrael.
Yeah.
Not the majority of Schavil is like a Paris in Olam Hazeh. But he certainly is not regarded, he's regarded by Chazal as being one of the lighter weight Shoftim. Okay?
Yerubal and Gidon.
Yeah.
Are brothers?
Yerubal and Gidon, the same person. Yerubal was Gidon's name when he fought the Baal.
Wait. The Pasuk Chavtet is even more mysterious.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I think that the use of the word Yerubal there was sarcastic. It was trying to tell us that a great big Yerubal this guy turned out to be. In other words, he didn't continue on with the fight with the Baal he was supposed to engage in. It was a jarring contrast, the Pasuk is telling us, in Gidon's life between his early, I don't know, early, but his the description in previous Prakim of his fight with the Baal and fight with Midian, and what came at the end of his end life when perhaps he was still learning or to being obeyed Hashem, but he was involved in all these lustful activities, and all around him Jews were worshipping Avodah Zarah, including his own ephod. Obviously Gidon is not doing the right Yerubal type activity. That's my understanding of it. Okay? Vayikasher meis Gidon, and of course after Gidon died, Vashivu bnei Yisrael vayiznu achrei Baalim, Vayam Yisrael went and they returned to worship the Baalim. It doesn't really say during his lifetime that they worshipped Baal, but they did, which says the Ephod, but not the Baal. But V'yeh Vayisrael yisim lehem Baal Bris l'Elohim. They took a god whose name was Baal Bris. I don't know who that is, but that was the one they took. V'lo zarchu bnei Yisrael as Hashem Elokeihem, I'm so do not remember their God. Now the Yonason takes a little bit of the brunt off that statement. The Targum Yonason says, "Lo yidachru bnei Yisrael yaspulchana d'Hashem Elokeihem." They didn't keep the worship of God. In other words, they remembered who God was. They remembered the Kodesh Baruch Hu was Elokim, but the worship, the rituals they took, they worshipped Baal Bris or whoever, the Ephod, or whatever else. The Jews were enticed by the flashy rituals of their surrounding neighbors, and that's the form of worship which they took on.
Now,
the Catholics are very good at that. L'havdil. I don't know, l'havdil. It's like the old Avodah Zarah. The Catholic, a lot of the success of the Catholic Church is the pomp and mystery and the ceremony involved. So here too, we don't got that many good ceremonies. Rabbi Yosef Ben Soloveitchik says that the whole one of the major themes of Judaism is that we're very anti-ceremony. We're very, very short on ritual, especially when there's no Beis HaMikdash. So, you know, Jews, sometimes they like to have this kind of stuff, so they go where they can find it, to the other religions. So that's what happened here. The Pulchana of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they didn't like. They went and they took on the Pulchana, these rituals of Baal Bris. What?
That's a
okay. V'lasu chesed. They didn't do chesed. Now skipping a page. In base Yerubal Gidon, with the house of Yerubal Gidon, kechol atova asher osam Yisrael, with all the good that he did to Am Yisrael. So the three elements here the Baal points out. They should remember Yerubal. A, that Gidon did fight the Baal, and they should have, the chesed which they should have done with Gidon is to follow his path as being Yerubal. B, they should remember that he was Gidon, that he was the great warrior, and they should be, they should remember his spirit. They should remember his spirit that he waged the war and he brought a salvation for Am Yisrael, right? And that salvation, if not for the spirit of the Yerubal, the ideals of the Yerubal, at least they should remember that salvation and therefore conduct themselves properly. Besides that, stop. Gidon was a leader. And they should have recalled that as well. They didn't remember any of this. And as a result, not only were they Obed Avodah Zarah, and they didn't fulfill the spirit of Yerubal, but also they wrought terrible devastation on the household of Gidon, as we'll see imminently in Perek Tes. So there are three things they should remember. They should remember Gidon's meeting of Yerubal and now worship Avodah Zarah. They should remember Gidon's salvation of them and Gidon's leadership of them. And they didn't remember that either, and therefore they turned to do terrible things, as we'll see in a minute. Okay, let's go further.
Yes. Very sharp contrast between what the pasuk says in summing up Gidon.
Right?
As opposed to one extreme expression of Chazal that said the seva tova, that he didn't really deserve it.
But we're giving him merit here primarily for his original salvation, right? And also, I assume.
But he pictured so many of the commentaries that you brought in this evening go out of their way to portray him as one of the lowest.
Lowest, right. But the final analysis, look, 40 years he kept the peace.
And the Pasuk says.
Right, that was the Tova. That in of itself should have sufficed for them not to do what they did. We didn't see what they did. Let's see what Am Yisrael did to Gidon. One second. Vayelech Avimelech, Ben Yerubal, Avimelech the son of Yerubal, went Shechema. Okay? And El Achemo, he went to his brothers, the brothers of his mother, who lived in Shechem, all his relatives. Vayedaberlehem, he spoke to them, Vokomishbachos Beis Avimo, and to the whole family of his mother's father, right, his whole mother's extended family. Laman, he said the following: Daburna bazne balei Shechem. Speak to all the householders in Shechem. Ma tov lachem. What's better for you? Logically speaking, ham shobachem shivimish. Do you want 70 people to rule over you? Kobane Yerubal, all the kids of Yerubal together. Im shobachem ishechod, or that one person should rule over you. Who's chadem? And when you think what's better, remember this too. Ki atzmechem ubesarchem ani, that I'm of your bone and I'm of your flesh. Who said that, by the way? Yeah, what other charlatan in Jewish history used that term? Ki atzmi ubesariyata. Lavan. Lavan said that to Yaakov. So the pasuk, I think, is telling us that Avimelech could be trusted about as far as Lavan could be trusted. Yeah.
I'm a little confused here. Wasn't this the son who was born in Shechem where the Pelegish was and the other wives were elsewhere?
Yeah, he must have been gone to, I guess, right after Shiva. He probably went to offer up for the Shiva, and then he came home afterwards and he said, okay, now it's time for me to take over. So now, bear in mind, this whole dialogue, before you ask the next question, bear in mind, this whole dialogue obviously could not take place if not for, again, that Gidon's rejection of the hereditary melucha not having been completely sincere. Because we're completely sincere. What happened means that Avimelech should take over. Gidon said explicitly, ain't nobody from my kids taken over. God is going to rule over you. Clearly there was some intention in Galit, perhaps the back of Gidon's mind, that there should be a hereditary kingship stemming from him.
It sounds like the wives and the sons all moved to Shechem.
No, but they're all there for Gidon's death. This is necessarily the wives all lived in Ophrah,
right?
Except for this Pelegish we had in Shechem.
Right.
Well, actually, we don't know. He could have had Pelegishim at strategic points across throughout the nation. But the main Pelegish here, which we're talking about, is in Shechem.
Mm-hmm.
So he went. Avimelech went down for Shiva. Now he came back, and now it's time to take care of business. So Vaydabru Acheimo Olav, Bazne Kol Bali Shechem. Indeed, his brothers of his mother spoke about him to all the Bali Shechem, as called Varmela, all of these things. Vayetli Bamachre Avimelech, and all of their hearts followed Avimelech, Kiyomru, because they said, hey, Achino, he is our brother. Now the Malam points out, there was no logical reason for them to go after Avimelech. He says, Malam says, it obviously wasn't for the good of society. Not because of the original proposal Am Yisrael made to Gidon, that will make your kids kings, but rather because of the emotional pull of brotherhood. And therefore, since there was no logic involved, it was just clanship. So then,
inter-shaved rivalry.
Could be had to do with the inter-shaved rivalry as well. In other words, now they're reclaiming Ephraim, at least on the distaff side is from Ephraim, so therefore it's good for them to take back part of the sovereign, the reign. Vaidnulo Shivan Kesef, so therefore they gave him $70 the baseball bris from the church funds. Vayiskobem Avimelech Anoshim, and Avimelech hired with that 70 kesef Anoshim raking of both him. Empty people who did things with haste, Vayechor Achrav, and they followed him. Vayavo Beis Aviv Ephrasa, so all these bandits came, the 71 bandits came, to their father's house in Ophrah, Vayaroges Achav. He killed his brothers. Obviously, not him alone, him and these 70 people. Bnei Rubal, the children of Yubal, Shivim Ish Alevin Echos. Almost all 70 of them on one stone. One was left. Vayavaser Yosam ben Yerubal HaKoton. Yosam, the youngest son of Yerubal, was left. Kinechba, because he hid. One was left. That's it. So this is where I talked about in the previous paragraph. Let me just emphasize that. This is the chesed which they neglected to do. You know, you figure they do a chesed with Beis Gidon, at least not kill the kids. Protect them. But they were swayed by Avimelech to such an extent that all of Gidon's kids, but one, were killed. So all the people of Shechem got together, v'chol Beis Milo, and I guess one of the neighboring towns, Beis Milo, and they went and they made Avimelech a king, by a lon mutzav, which was a certain tree, with had, Rashi says mutzav means there was a, oh I'm sorry, Rashi says Elon is a plateau in which there were mutzav, there were matzevos, there were stones, I guess monuments, which was by Shechem, I guess it's some sort of regal place where they could make anoint kings. Now an interesting thing is, you know, this is a typical takama which you would make, is that where's the rest of Am Yisrael? Who's making him a king over here? Made him a king. People. Baal Shechem and Beis Milo. We have no clue here as to whether the rest of Am Yisrael went along with this or not. We don't know. I don't know, it could be it'll come out later in the parak, but it could be either one of two things. Either Yitaka was only king over the city of Shechem, and we find that many places in Tanakh you have city kings. There was such a concept. Or what I think is more likely is that since Shechem was the seat of rule, to the extent that the Shoftim had rule from the times of Yeshua, whoever was king in Shechem was by definition king throughout Israel. Yeah.
That they
realize
one thing, there's no mention
of Yisrael
Shemin,
or
Yisrael.
Yeah. But it says.
Which is typical, mentioned by every other Melech.
You're right, it's not mentioned here, but it is going to be mentioned
and
later.
A left field parallel.
Yeah.
There's 69 left.
Yeah.
And the Torah always talks about 70 people coming into Mitzrayim. The real left field.
70 people coming down to Mitzrayim. And it was only 69 because Yocheved was Bein HaChomos. Yeah. It's an interesting parallel. The question is whether it's something we made of it. It's not enough just to bring it up. Now you have to think of an integral connection. But you want me to do your work for you. Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many parallels to Yaakov and Yosef.
To Yaakov and Yosef because of Shechem and the 69 and the 70.
And phraseology.
And Achei, yeah.
Okay, work on it.
That's very good. That's right.
Shechem
is Puranus and jealousy, strife.
When you see concepts of inequality and jealousy.
That's right. It must be something about Shechem. You're right. It's a good point, and we'll have to think about that for next week. See if we can come up with something. It's a good idea. You're right. There has to be a parallel here. Okay, very good. Yishukayach. Vayagidu Yosef. So Yosef still went. Vayelach was told this. Vayelach v'yamod b'rosh hargrizim. And he stood at the top of hargrizim, which I guess overlooked this whole scene. Vayisokolo, and he uplifted his voice. Vayikra, and he called out by Yomerlem, and he said to them, Shimu Eli Baalei Shechem, listen to me, people of Shechem, the householders of Shechem, Vishma Aleichem Elokim, and God will listen to you. Now, there are a couple of understandings here. First of all, what does he mean by Yishma Aleichem Elokim? The Malvim interprets, Hashem will judge us. Shem will judge who's right, me or you. Yonason, the Yonason Nazir here interprets that he was trying to get their attention or call them to do tshuva. He said, listen to me and God will hear your tefillos. So there's some kind of a call to tshuva or a call to get them to pay attention to what he had to say. There is an interesting Yal Gishmoni, which again here argues on the seems explicit psukim. The Yal Gishmoni says, he went up on Hagrizim and he said, you idiots. They were standing, according to this Yalkut, on Har Evel. Why are they standing on Har Evel? Because it says that the brachos were given on Har Evel in Chumash. So they thought, oh, Har Evel is a good thing. Okay? Oh,
Hagrizim was the brachos.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right, Hagrizim was the brachos, right? The brachos were given in Hagrizim and the clothes on our Abel. Okay. So it says there that Yosam, they were standing on... So which one are they standing on? They must have been standing on Hagrizim. So he went up on Hagrizim himself, and they were standing right by Hagrizim. So Yosam said to him, "You idiots. You came to Hagrizim because the brachos were given in Hagrizim. But... that means that according to the Yahud, who said the brachos? The people in Hagrizim said the brachos to the people in Arevo. And the people in Arevo said the brachos to the klalos to the people in Hagrizim. So you pick the cursed mountain to be on." And the Alchemist goes on to say, and the same thing is about the Shomronim. Because what did the Samaritans take over? Which mountain did the Samaritans establish their base on? Mikdash on? On Hagrizim. So they're fools. But the truth is, this Yahud Shimoni is very strange. Because we know that it wasn't the Shvatim, which are on the top of the mountain, who said the brachos and the klolos. The Levim down in the valley between the two of them said the brachos and klolos. And the Taka said the bracha towards Hagrizim and the klolos towards Harevel. So the Alkut Shimoni, I don't know what the Alkut Shimoni does with the Gemara, and it seems like the Psukim and Sefer Dvarim, where it says that the Levim in the middle did the brachos and the klolos, but it's an interesting perspective nonetheless. Yes.
Did they say Amen at each one of the
They said Amen,
well?
Yeah.
Everybody. All right. No, not everybody.
No, I think everybody did, no? Yeah. They directed at one of the hills that everybody said. Yeah, they directed their voices in one of the hills, but everybody answered Amen. Okay? Now comes one of the most famous passages in all of Tanakh. And it's Yosam's Moshe. And I would like to do the Malbim inside on this, so just enough for we can finish it. Besides the Malbim, there are other things, important things in the other commentaries, but the Malbim has a beautiful interpretation. So let's read it through all the way, and then we'll come back, we'll do as much of the Malbim as we can this evening, we'll finish next week. I'm first going to read the Pesukim inside for next 10 Pesukim or so. The kings, the trees went to anoint for themselves a king. And they said to the olive, "You be king over us." This is what the olive tree said. Do you want me to stop giving off my fat? I shall be, which is within me. Which gives glory to man, to God and to man. I'm going to go and become the king over the trees. So the tree said to the fig, "You go and be the king over us." Vatom lematayno, the fig tree said, "Hechtautius maskid, you want me to stop giving my sweetness? Ves nuvosi atoyevan, my good crop. Velachti lanua leitim, and I'm going to go be the king over the trees." Vayom reitim lagof, and so the tree said to the grapevine, "Lechiat mochilenu, you go and you be the king over us." Vatom lemagef, and the grapevine said, "Hechtautius to Roshia, I should stop giving off my juices. Ham samech elokim vanashim, which give joy to God and to man. And I want to go, should go become the king over the trees." So all the trees said to the thorn bush, lech atah. Everybody till now was in feminine. Lech atah, you go, melocholeni, you be the king over us. So the thorn bush said to the trees, "If you want to really make me, appoint me to the king, Aleichem, bo chasubatili, come take shelter in my shade. Yimain, if you don't take shelter in my shade, teitzei esh min ha'atod, then fire will come out of the thorn bush, v'sochal es arzei alavonon, and will consume the cedars of Lebanon." Okay, that's the mashal. Beautiful mashal, isn't it? Let's see the Malbim. There's a beautiful explanation of it as well. Let's go back the page. Now let's read the Malbim Shelos, because they're good questions. Shelos. Everybody see that in the Shvot HaShoftim on the bottom? Maratzov HaMoshel said, what did Yosef want with this Moshel? Lovatofas HaGefen HaZayis V'Ateinim Mikol Tzipri. Why did he choose these three? Lovat Bateinim V'Gefen HaMar L'chi Molchi. It says, go be a king with a queen, actually, with a Yud. V'Zayis HaMar Molcha. He said, with a hey. Below Milas L'cha. It says, if you take a look, it says in all of them lechim ochi, except by the zayis, it says molcha without lecha. It doesn't say go be king. It just says go reign. Lama kulam amar vayomra eitzim. Why by all that it says the tree said vayitzel atod, and by the thorn bush amar it says vayomra kala eitzim, that all the trees said. Okay? Halach halchu eitzim. The trees meant many different places. To appoint upon themselves a king. By Nimshal. The Nimshal here is, in other words, the what the parable is trying to represent is, Shebnei Adam, people, Ki Adam eitz asod, because man is likened to a tree, Hogu lakim lam shoter Moshe, went to appoint for themselves a governor. People who want a king, Levakish usually look for Isha Yosef Roy, the best person, Vayosef Mulan, the most elevated person, Lemahalach Shlemos Akla, in order to bring about perfection for society. Normally is not chosen by the masses. The heads and the wise men, they're the ones who choose. They're the electors. Therefore, it doesn't say at the beginning all the trees went. Some of them went. Well, Talom means to say, the best trees, Osei Apri, the ones who make the fruit, Shema Mubchorim Ba'am, which are the best people in the nation. V'ne'ach Tachlitzius Yitzchalku L'shloisha. Now, the three things one can pursue in life, three purposes. Tov, that which is good. Orei, that which is pleasant. Mo'il, that which is beneficial. Yeshosim Tachliso Levakesh Achatov. There's some people who quest after good. Babushu Tov. Because it's good. Lo shanevish nor that their soul be satiated. V'yeshivakish acharev l'gup yilvad. Some people just look for pleasure. V'yeshivakish hamamutza ben atov l'arev. And some people look for that which is between good and pleasant, which is shu'a mo'el, that which is beneficial. In other words, good very often is very intellectual, doesn't have any tangible benefit. So people look, some people look for just that which is very good, in and of itself. Some people look just for that which is pleasurable. Some people look for that which is both good and pleasurable at the same time, which has elements of both. Shabakoshes orevu pola chushabehemi. Looking for something pleasant is an animal tendency. Shabakoshes amoil, and looking for something which is beneficial, mipola sechel, is a logical thing to look for. First, you are both the people who choose are going to be askeni vachachamim, the elders and wise men. They're going to look for the complete good. And it alludes to this by saying that they said, they said to the olive tree, because the olive tree connotes es hatov, that which is good, kiyomotzi shem lamor, because it gives forth oil to illuminate, shezeh mashal ora chochma Torah, which alludes to the light of wisdom and Torah, v'or nikra tov, and light is called good. V'itzkim when they agree, ki le'ish kozeh loki, to such a divine person, roya amlucha, he should be the king. V'akim lomru l'cha malcha, therefore they didn't say, go be a king, or queen, because he doesn't have to move towards this, ki amalchus mechuyav elam, by definition he should be the king. But the Zayis said, "Avlisha Musha, there, this happy person, lo yove b'shoros b'shoros. He doesn't want rabbonos. He doesn't want these kinds of community leadership positions. Ki hitash b'senu mishleimuso anashi. It's going to take him away from his soul's perfection. Lios evel am. It's going to make him a slave to the nation. Levakeach in yonah, to constantly be concerned. Why would a wise man want to be a politician?" Like it says, I think when Moshe Rabbeinu took the elders, you think it's wonderful, nice to be in a position of authority, etc. L'chein Heshiv, he said, therefore respond, L'chiyach dios dishni, should I stop from my that with my fat, she'asogat ha'chokma, which is my grasp of wisdom, v'shefa nevuah, prophecy, asher bi, which is within me, asher bo yichavdu elokim v'anoshim, which is a glory for God and for man, k'yafos ha'ruch eloki, when one has a divine spirit, nikro b'shem kovet, that's called true kovet, true glory, b'kisbe ha'kodesh. You want me to become a king, to deal with their mundane issues? It's not for me. Since the wise men couldn't find the guy who they liked, their candidate said no. So should stop looking. So then another group got up. Shema Ashirim, those are the rich men, who want something pleasant for their physical body. For Ratzel Akim Ishmo, they wanted a good guy. Based on that which they wanted. And this is an allusion to a fig, which has a good taste. It's pleasant. And they said, L'chiyat. So the rich man, they're hedonists. They want the good hedonist. Even though they know that really the kingship should be go to a person who's spiritual, nonetheless, you the tainer, you got some good traits. You're a good businessman. You made a lot of money. You're rich. You're pleasant. So go. You try and become the king. You get the other traits which are necessary. And this means that they look for a rich person, gibor chai, a strong person, who can sustain them, with pleasures, and pleasant lifestyles. But the fig tree said, also such a person, or at last, since he has some perceived perfection, that his life is pleasant, he won't want to leave it because of the nation. It's not like Ross Perot. So this, if he's rich, why would he want to become a king? He has it all. So he has to go and deal with these headaches. So he says, he saw by Yomu Lemar, there's a person, rich people say in those days, lo yechovesh, I don't want to be a ruler. Then I'm not going to have any more money anymore. That's that which it says, v'chzaltis mitzki, uvzelu omar shishbo tolos elokim anoshim. Here he says, doesn't say the teino, that I give pleasure to man and God. Ki bemes michelek orev enbo tolos amitichah, because there's no real benefit from the teino. Doesn't symbolize anything beneficial. It just tastes good. Vayom raitzin l'gevin. So then the tree said to the grapevine, "Adi soru kas shlishis memutza." Then the middle guys got up. Bench them. L'chor ish memutza. They wanted to choose a middle guy. Ben atov arev, somebody between the good and the pleasant. Vua moil. And those are the ones who have benefit. Hanir mazbagefin, which is alluded to in the grapevine. Shiyayin samach levav enosh, that wine will cause people to rejoice. And wine and good spices cause people to be smart. V'omer, it says, Bereish kolas, when it says, when all those who heal, anachem or eye wine is among the best healers. Ratzalomer, it means to say, kivchor isha chacham bimdinios, they'll pick somebody who's good in politics, uvetuva midos, and has good midos, asher yanigem will take them, will bring them, not necessarily with wisdom, but pitak yatzedek, with justice. Vishma mishpateim, and will judge them, with toiva chayim dinim, in good political fashions. Vatonlem agevin, the grapevine said, Avagam agevin shu chacham amedini. Also, the grapevine, which is the political man, he doesn't want to leave his shleimus, which is davar mesamech elokim v'anoshim, which causes joy for man and God. Shutova midos, that he has good midos. Shifarim tzedaka, the best of tzedaka, chesed, rachamim, yismal b'melokim, which are also good for God. It's not wisdom, but it's good midos. V'tov anhaga, yismuchu b'anoshim, v'echinu al-eitzim. He has good conduct. He why should he become a crooked politician? He'll be a consultant. He doesn't want to be the actual king. Ayom kolaitim al-atod. So then they went to the thorn bush. Then the people who weren't the rich and wise and all those stopped levakish melech. They couldn't find a king. So the fruit bearing trees, they couldn't look for a king anymore. Kilomatsu, because they couldn't find anybody. Then all the other trees got up. The barren trees, which are most of the trees. They want a king. Since they're empty, they don't have any purpose in any fruit. They'll choose a thorn bush. The worst for them, the chazak tells us, no benefit. What's his milo? He can't get near him. Because he's full of hurtful thorns. Like it says, those who are evil are like a thorn bush. Vanimshal means, after the higher one. Stop looking for king. Yitzasva amon kulam. All the masses got together. Lakim aleim ish nedar kol shleimus. To take a person who is bereft of any shleimus. Fagura rulishim kulam, the worst of all of them. Umaloso is only my list. Rakimole retzach is full of murder of a romach mechonis and weaponry. Fayomer outside, so the former said, Humakabla samalucho. He wants it. Vadoishachra, and he even seeks it. But shaloi gralo yadashum shleimus. He's got no perfection to lose. Rakbasher yitzchamets levavo. Ilibam nachon imo. He is just, his heart is, I'm not sure exactly what that means. Name and lochem as name, he says, im be'emes, uvutome im even true atem, moshchim as he are going to anoint me, bo chasu b'tzili, come live in my shay. V'yodu ha-sha'atare lo tzel kla. The Thornbush has no shay. V'oshav v'klum, it's very low down to the ground. But Ratzon Lomar means, Izvu ma'alaschem. If you want to join with me, you have to lose whatever advantage you have. Atem arzi alvona aromim anisoyim. Those upon you who are lofty and high, hishpilu, come down. Sheves tachti, live under me, v'makom shafal more, make yourselves low and vile like me. V'akotim shleim achivim, yulachem ma'utzel ma'chse, live under my oppression, under my hurt. V'imayin, and if you don't, if you rebel against me, don't think I can't damage you because I'm low down. Okay, it's not true. When thorns burn, this fire will consume the cedars of Lebanon as well. Okay, we're going to see other things about this mushroom next week, but just one thing I want to mention in closing is that, I have to say something about Hanukkah, is that the Rav Zevin makes a parallel between Menashe and Ephraim's dichotomy between Menashe and Ephraim and Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. He says, Menashe always connotes Sur Meira, going away from evil. Ephraim always connotes Asei Tov, going towards good. And he works that into the names. It's late, I can't do that now. But he says, Beis Hillel is like Ephraim, because they represent Hitalut, going up. Mali Makodesh Vemo Reading. You go up from the low Madregas to the higher Madregas. You start out low and you work your way up. Beis Shammai, they represent Sur Meira, eradicating. When a fire consumes something, eradicates the evil, so there's nothing left at the end. That's why they start with a lot, and they gradually build down from 8 to 1. So therefore, the machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is machlokas between Menashe and Ephraim. And Yosef's machlokas between with Yaakov was the same machlokas of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Yosef held Menashe is better, Sur Meira is better, and Yaakov held Ephraim is better, Asei Tov is better. And Halacha is like Beis Hillel, and that's why Ephraim, who's the Asei Tov, is more suitable for Melucha than Menashe throughout Jewish history, and he's always supreme.